Blog Talk Radio.
Well, see that we can sustain. Oh, I know you're mine. I know you are mine all the time. Seems to be dying. I look in my mind. I say to myself, I must be down the reason I heal. Most of the time, when I contemplate, reminiscing, yes, I know I'm an African king, John. God, why? So they carry a knife abroad. And them work black people so hard. We want go back a bit, yeah. Half full time we go home and we yard, yeah. Sometimes I wonder when we'll be home again. Swimming down the river Nile, just you and me, my friend. When I wonder sometimes when we'll be home again. Living up in the ancient sea, what a fight, my friend. Sometimes I sit and wonder, are the ancient souls in Senegal, in Morocco and down in Nigeria, Tanzania and Gambia. I wonder when I be home again. When will I get a chance to listen to the song of my friend? When I get a chance to be back home again? Sitting down in my bed and then I cool out my friend. Oh, what a feeling. It's like the feeling goes when the mama tribe come out to make them rain dance. Dancing in the center of the street, going around and I feel the heat. I got to move my feet. I am carry a knife for my brother. Oh, and let them work black people so hard. God. And them no one give me no regard. That's why me want go back home and me yard. Sometimes I wonder when will I be home again. Dancing and eating with my African friends. From Bori Island straight back to Ethiopia. I hear the food that bombing out in Jamaica, way down in the east. I know they waiting a piece for me, and I'm ready to go there somewhere. That's a border, and I will never be back down there again. When will I get a chance to sit with my...
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. So while I wait for my guests to call in, hopefully, I'm going to play a few more tracks. But I want to go ahead and talk about something that's bugging me, and this is tax time. And we got a lot of individuals that could possibly be getting a refund. And the thing that bugs me is, people get this little money and they just throw it right out the window. You know, it's your money. More ways than one. And what's going on in the world today? You can't go ahead and just be splurging and spending willy-nilly. You need to do things a little bit more wisely. We need to figure out some ways to invest that money and put that money to good use. sitting on it can be kind of good, but if we are not in a position to sit on it, so we need to spend it. You need to make that money work for you. So let's think about that. Trying to get a couple of people who have ideas and who work in the financial arena, I can give you some advice on some ways to do that. So I'm going to play another track, and then I'm going to go to call the phone line and see if we can get some kind of resolution here. So check this out.
Nothing to me, but when they rock us in the streets, we say, oh, we. You see the freak in the beach, she do me. I hit them itty bitties with the sticky ooey gooey. I got more funk in my left pinky toe. I got more soul in my style than they will ever know. I got more rhythm than I'll ever need to show. We got them groceries, bro. Yo, loonies, let go.
I got the vocal, let the loony man take over. Get deep into my hole. If you're lost, then picture go. I heard styles that are the soul, but it's no original flow. Like the loonies and the man with the nose. Notice my flow kick like a loaded Mac 11. Ghetto heaven could climb with Mocha Thompson, James Evans. Block wars, media criticize Tupac for. Homies in the hood be strapped with goods and we got more.
Didn't you know, my brother's got more. So check your new flow, cause here we go, we go, we go. Look how we throw a little something to roll.
Voodoo running through my veins. Quiz, oppressed, yes, crazy, no, not insane. I smoothie through the menu, then I make my order. I got that dominant gene, so if you're annoyed, hide your daughter. The love you're giving is based on what I do for you. For the right amount of money, you probably let me boo for you. I like to glide up in it, but I got my pride, ain't no whore. Don't second guess your man, cause he got more.
Didn't you know, my father's got more. So check the new flow, cause here we go, we go, we go.
Wanna battle, well let's battle. White blasted, they plastic ass get put underground with the fraggles. Snaggle tooth rhymers with no flavor. Flavor gang of neighbors, then move away so they won't be called haters. Captain Saber ho, up and away you go. The O is too unfadable. But don't trip, get a grip, make your own skit. Be sure, before you slide through the door, cause we got more.
Didn't you know, my brother's got more. So check the new flow, cause here we go, we go, we go. How we throw a little something to roll to, pump hold to, from the OEO we know. Didn't you know, our brothers got more, so check the new flow, cause here we go, we go, we go. Look how we throw a little something to roll to, pump hold to, from the OEO we know.
This is Dave. How you doing, sir?
Captain Head, how you doing, man?
I'm okay, brother. And yourself?
I'm working it out, man. Trying to deal with it.
Okay. I enjoyed that last track. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Digging in the crates, man. I actually heard him, Shock G, on somebody's program. And I was like, let me go on YouTube some of these things here. And I just happened to go ahead and grab a few of them and throw them in the system.
Okay.
So, you know, hey, you got to go ahead and go back a little bit. But, yeah, but what do you think about people going ahead and spending their income tax, their refunds on garbage?
Well, you're absolutely right, Rob. I mean, they should look at potential investments for themselves that can benefit them without a question. I know some people will take their check, wait for it, and they're looking to try to go out there and get the next flat panel TV. And, I mean, is that an investment? It's hard. I mean, I don't think so. Getting the latest TV is not. So I agree with you. They need to put some of that money away or buy a precious metal such as gold or silver and take a portion of it. So I agree with you. It really should start to think of that income tax refund not as something to just go out there and buy some products and services just to buy them, but to make an investment for themselves so they can turn that money into more money eventually.
What would be like the easiest way, in your opinion, to go ahead and put some money, you know, to go ahead and invest in something? Get a little bit more specific. I've seen stuff on Scottrade, E-Trade. You know, these things are pretty simple. When you got people that's going ahead and getting several thousand dollars, I mean, like, that's easy to go ahead and get into invest in those areas. So do you recommend that?
I mean, to do online trading is both an art and a science. And it is what I would recommend for people is go to, for instance, Scottrade or E-Trade or Forex.com and play with a practice account. When you do a practice account, then you can understand the software and understand both the fundamental analysis and the technical analysis that is associated with trading currency, commodities, or even stocks. And what I mean by that is fundamental information is when the Fed releases the job report, home building, consumer price index, those are reports that come out, and that falls under fundamental analysis. And when you analyze when a report comes out, then you can look at a stock and see how it moves up or down.
It's relatively simple. I mean, I see it being relatively simple. All you got to do is just go ahead, and it's in the newspaper a lot of times. You don't have to go ahead and do a whole lot of extensive research. A lot of stuff's in the newspaper, and you can go ahead and maybe pick up one to two books and go ahead and do a little research. I think it's fairly simple. It doesn't take much. You just see how it's doing. And you wouldn't put your money on something that's losing money.
No, you wouldn't. But
put your money on something that's gaining.
One thing that, in essence, it is easy. Either a stock price will go up or it will go down. Now, the question is, stocks move up in a cycle. They go up for a while, you're making money, then they could have a correction or something could happen in the market where it comes down, then it goes back up. So it depends on your strategy. And learning strategies is very important when you start buying stocks, commodities, or even currencies. So one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is they can put what's called a stop-loss order in on a stock, currency, or a commodity. People don't realize that when the market turns against them, then people get caught up with, well, I hope that the market's going to turn around. And sometimes those turnarounds can be years and years. And sometimes people panic when the price of a stock or currency or commodity goes down. And they're losing money, and then they just panic, and we'll get out of it, and it could be a correction. So understanding how price moves is an important thing, and understanding the trends, which is probably the most important item in trading a currency, stock, or commodity, is vital. If the trend is up, buy. If the trend is down, then you want to be a seller. And a lot of people don't understand that you can make money in the market when a stock goes down. And that's called short selling. Most people are conditioned, I buy low and I sell high. Well, you can sell high and buy back low, and that's called short selling. And that's a very important strategy. And people sometimes don't realize, like, when the stock market is, like, quote, when it crashes, they think, oh, you know, they hear the stories of people jumping off of buildings, people committing suicide. But they don't realize that in the market, there is an opposite position. It is a net zero or net sum game. So when you hear about people losing, a fund maybe losing $5 billion, guess what? Someone else made $5 billion. You cannot have a buyer unless you have a seller. That's the bottom line. So it's a net sum game. And people need to learn about the strategy of short selling, because the market always drops faster than it will rise. That's just the nature of the markets. It's just something that the humans, when it comes to prices, when things drop, they drop a mile. Look at the housing market, for instance. Houses were increasing in value year after year after year. And then within a two-year period, housing prices dropped, I mean, phenomenally. And it's incredible how fast they drop. So that's my advice to people. Get online, open up a practice account, get used to seeing what's going on, see if you win within your practice account, and then if you're confident, then go ahead and make that investment into that. Now, the other option is, if you don't want to learn trading currencies and commodities on your own, then purchase a physical asset such as silver. There are many places where you can buy silver or gold, and you can just hold on to that physical asset. So that's another, you know, another way to in people to invest their money. And let me throw out another area: entrepreneurship. If you know that someone in your family or someone within your community or someone has a great idea or needs some support, make an investment into that individual. Make an investment. I mean, work with the person, see what their business plan is. Do your due diligence first. But you'd be surprised what $1,000 can do to someone or $2,000 can do for someone that's starting off in a business. It could be very significant. And so
Exactly. And that's what I was saying. People, a lot of us are going ahead and purchasing things that we really don't need. And going ahead and getting, this is the time people getting those checks, and they worked a whole bunch of deals and went to a bunch of people to go ahead and get the numbers right, and then they wind up buying something ridiculous. Hold on just a minute. I have another call on the line. 312-841. Your line is open. State your name, where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Ricky Brown calling from Chicago with the Westside Historical Society Juneteenth Festival 2011.
Greetings, Mr. Brown.
How are you?
All right. Hello, Captain Hit.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hello, sir.
Captain
How are
Hit
you?
Captain Hit from the International African American Caucus. Mr. Brown, what do you think? You know, should people go ahead and waste that money? I mean, I think it's a waste when they get those income tax returns. I think this is one of the problems that we have in our community. This is a time where people can go ahead and pretty much reinvest in the community. Do you agree with that?
I agree with you, but I was about to waste mine due to the fact that the car that I presently have, it's what young people call a hoopty or whatever. And trying to invest in that car, you know, I have a old tank, one of those Volvos, a 91. And my thoughts were originally to go get my mechanic, have him to do whatever work that needs to be done on the car that I immediately know needs to be done. But if I invested part of my taxes in that, I was wondering, after the fact, putting this money into this old car, 3 months down the road, 90 days, something new ended up happening to the car. Now I'm continuing to invest money into the car. So, I mean, you know, what is your take on that? Because I think some people turn around and use their taxes to not just throw the money away, but they turn around and take that money and get what is essential in order to get them from point A to point B sometimes. And that's kind of my position, point A to point B, this money that I'll receive from my taxes, invested in something that I really need right now. And because, you know, I'm really not a stock market person. I've had penny stock before when the so-called little crash or whatever happened, I lost, you know, money. So it's kind of up in the air. So what do you think about that, sir?
One thing I was just thinking that, hey, look, if you invest in a car and it's going to break down within 90 days, there's ways you can put the money in some kind of stock where you can probably have even more money at the end of that 90 days. I could be wrong, but that's the way I see it.
Yeah, but see, in 90 days, if that car breaks down, then I'm without a car at all. So if I go on and just take the money and invest in me a car that I know is going to be dependable, then, you know, I'm okay. So, you know, it's to me, it's a catch-22 situation.
It is. I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. You agree with that, Captain Hitt?
Indeed. It's a something that you really have to analyze because, well, you know your car better than anyone else. Can you use part of your money and buy yourself a quote another hoopty, so to speak? I mean, you'd be surprised at what you can find on, like, for instance, Craigslist. If you go to Craigslist and you look under automotive, you'd be very, very surprised at what you may find on there to purchase yourself a new car. When I mean new, I mean a used car. I'm the kind of person that I've never believed in buying a new car because that's a losing battle right from the jump. I mean, you buy yourself a brand new car, you drive it around the block one time, go to the dealer and say, okay, I don't want the car, take it back, and he won't give you full price because it's technically a used car. So
yeah.
There's if you look at some good websites out there, like I said, Craigslist, you may find someone that just wants to get rid of something and that they don't value it, but something that you could value, and you could get it pretty cheaply. I know a guy who got a half-decent truck for $1,000 and works very well. I mean, he needs some exhaust work on it, but, I mean, it does the job. There are certain other cars that you can that are pretty reliable that I think you can get for a very, very cheap cost. I mean, and I look at that as a car is an investment for yourself because you need to move from point A to point B, and if it's used for business, then a car is an investment for you. Now, if we're talking about getting a third or fourth car just because we want to get a car just so that we can get the latest whatever Cadillac or Lincoln, then, of course, then that's just being materialistic.
No, well, that's never been my thing. I'm not a Cadillac person. I'm into an economical, you know, type vehicle to get, you know, what I need to have done. If it's a job to get to work and back, or if, like, with my own business, to be able to get me to the client and
yes, absolutely.
You know, that type of thing, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, gas mileage to me is the most important. I mean, I've got my little, quote, hoopty, but it gets half-decent gas mileage, and that's, to me, is what's the most important. And hopefully one day, yeah, I'd love to be able to get a Prius or some type of hybrid car. I think the prices of them are very high right now, but I'm looking for energy efficiency.
Yeah, exactly.
Because,
you know, the car that I have, $20, man, fills my tank up. And
yep.
I'm used to, you know, hey, I can get around in it. But
yes.
A winter ago, I'm in the downtown area and tear off my whole exhaust system because of a pothole. And,
yep.
You know, now they say that any car that's made after 95, you don't necessarily have to take the emissions test or something. It may be quoting it wrong, but, you know, I heard this. So I've been driving for a while with my exhaust. You know, not on, and it sounds like a hot rod. My wife loves it because she said it sounds like a hot rod, but, you know, it's a, you know, pressure is low, you know. You see my car, don't you even go there, buddy, you know. And I love this car because, you know, it's metal. It's not this fiberglass that everybody has. It's a nice car, but it just needs a lot of work, you know, on it. My wife just hollered, it needs a lot of work. So, you know, we need to, you know, kind of upgrade, and it would be a good thing to take, you know, this tax money and upgrade my car because I have, you know, my own business now. So that's how I look at it. And I think
and once again, you're buying the car to make an investment, and that's an investment. That's a tool that is necessary for you to buy so that you can make more money. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, once again, if you're just doing it out of like a lot of people would do it just to go out there and get the latest car. And it's amazing to me that how people are. I mean, I've always been a big proponent. If you can't buy it, if you don't have the money to buy it, then don't buy it. I prefer, yes, I have a small little hoopty. It's good. I maintain it. But I own it outright. I don't owe anything on, I don't owe anybody anything. And yet I've seen guys go out there and get the latest whatever Ford Mustang, and these guys got 6 years worth of payments, and I mean $250 a month, and you on add the insurance, and it's just way too much money, just wasting. And just because they want to have that quote nice, you know, nice car, if you can't buy it in cash, then don't buy it at all. And if you only got $1,000, then say so be it. Buy it for $1,000. In the end, you will get to the same. You'll get from point A to point B just as fast as a person driving a Ferrari. When you're stuck in traffic,
that's what I was talking about when people go ahead, and that's what I mean by the waste. You know, you can put that money to better use. But in your case, Brother Ricky, you know, that's an investment that you need because it's also invested. It's also keeping your business rolling. That's understandable. I wasn't criticizing that. My criticism comes when I see people, just like Captain Hitt mentioned earlier, when people buying the flat screen TVs and, you know, buying the nice furniture or going ahead and all these nice clothes and stuff. And I mean, that's better ways to do it. That's senseless. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, I know if your car is not running well, you should go ahead and, you know, this is the time to go ahead and make those changes because it keeps you rolling. I have another call on the line. 773. Is that you, Brother Perry?
Yes, sir, Brother Rob. That's me. Can you hear me?
Hey, I got you. We have Brother Ricky on the line.
Yes, Brother Ricky.
And Captain Hitt. Brother Ricky, so what do you think about the topic, man? Well, do you think people are throwing their money down the rat hole? That refund check? Or could they put it to better use, investing in something? And something else, I really think that this is a time when people are talking about, hey, if I had the money, I'd go ahead and put it in, you know, on your cause, or go ahead and donate it to go ahead and keep you going. So, you know, you're doing something, especially for us trying to do something in the community or trying to do something in the positive direction.
You know, my take my take on that deal is, you know, I heard the captain earlier talking about, you know, stocks and put options and various, you know, ways to invest. And, you know, I wish the African-American community had a stock that was its own that we could put our dollars back into to see our money. You know, I remember.
I have something to respond and but like an investment thing that I think would be pretty good in neighborhood development. Can you all hear me? I don't know if,
got you, brother.
If I'm on there. This is Brother Perry Smith. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell them what you do in Chicago. You're in Chicago,
okay.
So you're going to meet Brother Ricky and Captain Hitt later.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Perry Smith, and I'm president and chairman of Morale Builders Incorporated. It's a nonprofit, tax-exempt, 501c3 community organization. And we sponsor neighborhood programs in seven component areas, which we launch neighborhood programs from: one in education, two in health and sciences, three in housing and environment, four in economic and career development, five in leisure time activities, that's recreation entertainment, six in public safety, and the seventh one in communications, that's dealing with TV, newspaper, radio, internet, so forth, interracial relations, men and women. So we ask the community to submit their proposals to us for the programs and so forth that they have in the community that they feel that the community needs. Maybe them themselves can look out into the community and say, well, you know, if we had a housing program to obtain the property in our own neighborhood, maybe we can provide low to moderate income housing for ourselves. So by us having a nonprofit 501c3 tax exempt community organization, people can invest, like we might say, we want to obtain this building neighborhood, you can contribute, and they can contribute toward it, and I can give them a tax credit, a write-off. And, you know, this way we could provide more programs in the community. They can get an immediate tax credit right then. They can feel it. You know, the money that they invest, they get at least that back. Sometimes you put money into the bank, the interest rate is what, not quite, well, around 1%. It's no money, you know, quarterly. You don't get any money like that. And then it don't help your community, not. It might help you personally a little bit, which is hardly anything. You won't get anywhere. So if people would invest in their neighborhood 501c3, we have a multifaceted 501c3 that can empower, I can empower everybody in the state of Illinois. If you got to represent the people, if you want to do something about your community, people that get real estate and so forth, you can donate your real estate properties because you just pay massive property taxes killing you, you know, just holding on to the property. You can donate it to us, and we'll give you a tax credit for it. If a bank holds a building and we hold the building and no one attends it, we don't pay estate tax, but the bank, they do. So it'll drain the bank, and the bank had to pull the depositors' money. When you can donate the your mall, you can donate vacant buildings and so forth, the land, instead of having land and you just paying property tax like crazy, donate it to us. And we can put it back to use in the community. By having property, now we can tell the banks and so forth, and with management teams and so forth, we can ask for grants. Everyone in the listening viewership, if you have programs in education, health and sciences and so forth, maybe you can write a proposal and we can ask for a grant, or we can raise funds for income-generating engine, economic engine in the community to gobble up property and put it back to use for our own neighborhood, gobble up the business, commercial districts, property, and put it back into use. If we have the property, we don't pay estate taxes, so somebody will come up with an idea to have a program and probably can get it funded to put it in the commercial district. And you'll see a faster return on it. We tell the communities to give us a 10% discount on their goods and services, so to drive people toward the business so they have an incentive. You got 10 businesses that offer Scott Tissue at a dollar. Well, one of them, one of you all, will give us a 10% discount where we could get it for 90 cents. Which business would you want to go to spend your dollar? At the one you can get it for 90 cents, or would you rather spend it at the one that you just have to pay the full dollar? So a business would give back to the community like a 10% discount, people would go to you. Like for us morale builders, if you join our organization, whether if you're a resident or a businesses, if you we can advertise your business for $25. For $25, we'll advertise you in color for a whole year. Our account representatives will come. This is an economic development for the community to provide jobs. We're looking for 300 account representatives. You go out into the field. I'll give each one of our account representatives $10 for a means to earn an income, and the $15 will come back to us to invest back into the community for youth and community services. This way, you'll get a fast return. Maybe we invest in other job training programs. People should invest in neighborhood income-generating programs, not for-profit programs where it just suck the money out of the neighborhood, but suck the money into the neighborhood. If the business give us a 10% discount, we'll advertise them in color for a year. We'll pay our worker that went to there $10 and the $15 will come back to the community. That's investing back into the neighborhood. The people that who want to get a card to get a 10% discount can buy it from the stores, which we'll pay the stores $10, and the community store will raise $15 to that'll go back into the community for reinvestment, and I'll supply all the stores with as many cards as they can sell to their customers, and I'll pay you $10 from no investment, one $25 contribution, and you can write it off. And the people that can get the cards from you, they can write it off too.
Brother Pierre, you have a website?
Yeah.
You have a website, Brother Pierre?
Yes,
put your website out there.
Morale Builders.
Go ahead. I want to go ahead and play a couple clips real quick.
MorellBuildersInc.org. And, and our email is MorellBuildersInc@yahoo.com.
I want you to come back. Stick with us for a minute. I want to play a couple of clips real fast.
Yeah.
One is, Mickey, I copied it from the show last week, so check him out.
Chairman of the Westside Historical Society, my name is Ricky Brown. This summer, June 16th through the 21st, we're having a Juneteenth festival, 5-day festival. It's going to be free to the general public. We have 300 vendor spaces available, from food, merchant, and information. We'll have a carnival, fireworks, three large stages of entertainment. It's going to be a very nice event. This is the fifth year that we put on this. We're expecting 10,000 to 15,000 people a day. If people want more information, they can go to our website, which is www.juneteenth2011.com. Again, that is juneteenth2011.com. And we ask for your support. We're looking for the community to come out and assist in the planning for the event. We meet every Saturday at 1 p.m. over at the Garfield Park Golden Dome, which is 100 North Central Park, right off of Washington and Central Park. Again, that's 100 North Central Park, right off of Washington there. And it's every Saturday at 1 p.m.
Brother Ricky,
this is Brother Perry. I'm still here.
Okay. Brother Ricky, I want him to go ahead and tell us what that guy was talking about.
What, the guy you just played?
Yeah.
That's funny, man. That guy was that guy was myself. Brother Perry, I know what you're talking about when you talk about 501c3s and investing back into the community through not-for-profit organizations, keeping the money into the community. We are Westside Historical Society, and that's exactly what we're trying to get the community to do, is to invest in the e-commerce that we would bring through this festival for those 5 days, where it's going to economically allow small businesses to showcase, you know, their products, organizations, to allow the community to know what they're doing in the community, and at the same time to bring some consciousness to the community here on the west side of Chicago. It's a very historic area. Through our research, we know that the Austin area has the highest populations of African Americans in the city of Chicago. Factoring in Lyle and Garfield, you would have the highest population of African Americans in the city. Not sounding Willie Lynch like separating the South side, you know, and the other side.
Yeah,
but
that's
basically to bring that same consciousness that's on the South side to the West side. Just
yes,
in the line, just on, in the Lawndale area only, you have 720 vacant lots. I recently did a site for a young lady who's running for office over in the 24th Ward. Her name is Beatrice Boyce, and she thought about trying to incorporate the Lawndale area. And doing her website, she brought that to my attention of how many vacant lots were in the area. So I put on her website a virtual map where if you walk down from 16th and Costner all the way to Albany, you would see nothing but lots. You know, this is a new frontier that needs to be
That's right. We invest in our neighborhood. It takes millions of dollars in development. Why not? Companies can donate to us. We'll give them a tax write-off, and the money is invested to develop those lots.
Hold on, Perry. Let me throw this out there real quick. Those lots, those can be an investment, and some of those lots are relatively cheap. I mean, like, if we don't have to go ahead and have that problem, like Brother Ricky was talking about with his car, and versus going ahead and buying that flat screen TV. I mean, that flat screen TV could go ahead and buy you a lot.
That's right. And if you can,
what's the benefits?
You can buy it through the tax exempt organization and probably get it at a cheaper rate, or they get it. We can buy it and sell it at a cheaper rate that you try to buy it directly, and you'll be spending more, and so we can reduce the prices.
I'd like to throw a question. We can offer
banking and prevent overdraft prevention, and I can provide deposit protection and give everybody, as far as the listening ears can hear, a corporate debit card with Bank of America.
Well, could I just say this real quick, and not to cut you, Captain, because I really want your feedback on this, is, like, I grew up over in the Lawndale area. It's something else when you turn around and you can actually give a date on when a community died. In April 4th, 1968, at 11:40 a.m., Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. That same day, the West Side was destroyed. Here it is 43 years later, and you have in that community the same devastation that happened 40-something years ago. You see? So we're talking about investing in a community, because you had an organization called the Lawndale People's Planning Action Committee. They were given all of that land in Lawndale and the old International Harvester building that was across the street from 26 in California. They were selling shares in that property to the community at $5 a share. As usual, some idiot turned around and walked off with all of that money. That devastated that community, you see. So, you know, if someone could come up with something like Brother Perry is saying, like, we have a 501c3 organization. If people were to look at those organizations and see that, you know, this is a tax write-off for you, then it's also the humanitarian thing to do to reinvest in the community, to rebuild the community. If you look at Little Village over there, it reflects the people that live there. It looks, that money stays there. You very seldom see a Jewel or a Dominic's over in their area. They still have those mom-and-pop businesses that they support. So what's your gentleman's take on that?
I agree with every word that he's saying. And if we work together, us nonprofit 501c3s, utilizing the people's ideas, we can sponsor their ideas and probably put a Jewel in on that vacant lot or an Aldi's, because we can ask for the funding or collaboration of us organizations can collaborate together.
Hold on, Perry.
Yeah.
For me personally, I'm against going ahead and bringing in a Jewel's or something like that, one of these big corporate stores. I'm for going ahead and let's contact black farmers and go ahead and create our own produce and everything. Like, I'm a chef.
Right, I agree.
And so I want to go ahead and see coming
to
the
open
area.
We up a Rob Chef place.
Them things.
And we got video where we put it on TV and a videotape that historical area.
Hold on. those things, I think that bringing in all those some of those outside people instead of dealing with what's in the community is actually hurting the community. Because what's going to happen again is once those companies pull up, it's going to go ahead and keep the neighborhoods devastated.
Well, that depends on the companies. That depends on the leadership of those companies, because us tax exempt companies can own for profit companies. So if we own a Jewels or a McDonald's or whatever, we're using those profits to invest right back into the neighborhood, not to let those that type of corporate dollar to go right out of the neighborhood. We'll take it because we control the profits of it. And we take the profits and reinvest it back into our organization that's directed back into the community. So if we they buy our McDonald's hamburger, the more McDonald's hamburgers they buy, you'll see a youth center that came up in the neighborhood or some housing that them popped up. Those millions of dollars that would have normally went out of the neighborhood will stay in the neighborhood. And, you know, so we invest in the black and more.
We're dealing with the food area. I don't want to see a more outside. McDonald's isn't helping the neighborhood. McDonald's is hurting the neighborhood in more ways than one. Just like with housing prices.
If the owners of the McDonald's would invest
more dollars, I'm looking at it from being a chef, okay, and knowing what I know about nutrition. That is not helping the neighborhood.
Right.
It's not.
No.
It never will, never has. And to go ahead and bring that stuff into to me is garbage. Go ahead, bake your own bread. Go ahead and figure out, we can go ahead and go to wholesalers and get our own meat and go ahead and grind our own beef and make our own sandwiches. We don't need them. We can go ahead. There are a lot of black farmers, and we need to go ahead and be pushing what's going on with the black farmers. And I can teach you how to bake bread.
See, that's what we need, the community organization to push those health programs, like in our health component and the science behind it. And we push those programs that's healthy to the community, the healthy hamburgers.
To the community. McDonald's is not healthy to the community. What Chef, to me, is saying is that why do we have to always continue to keep buying white franchises in our community? Majority of our dollars continuously go out, and I'm sure Captain would agree that majority of our dollars go out of the community. What's wrong with us doing, like Chef was saying, with those black farmers? What's wrong with us being self-sustaining, investing our monies and keeping them there? That's why I said you very seldom see Dominic's or Jewel in Hispanic communities, because that's where the ma and pa businesses come back, black business. We have nothing but Korean, Arab, and
Arabs.
Yeah, you know, all these businesses in our community taking all the money out. Now, you even have these little carts in the summertime that they're pushing around, selling this corn with mayonnaise and all this garbage on it. And now, where is their sanitation license on that little cart? Where is the where they're using the washroom? Where they're washing their hands at? You see what I'm saying? We're so apt to run out and spend our money. And I agree with you, Chef. You know, a lot of folks run out and get that little tax dollar and go get them a Mercedes-Benz and don't have Benz money. You know, we're real quick to run out and support everybody else's business or get behind somebody else's banner instead of getting behind our own banner and turning around and keeping our money in our community. That's the investment. Our children, we are the investment, our houses, you know. They've just given a guy over in the 24th Ward part of the TIF money to turn around and build housing over there where the old Sears and Roebuck area is, but he's getting ready to take a historic landmark, the Murphy Hill Gallery, out of the building. Now, I mean, what sense does that make? You're going to take something that is vital to the community culturally and then turn around and build $300,000 to $400,000 condos when people in the community only turn around and make $10,000 or maybe $15,000 a year. Who is this for? You know, that to me, that's insanity to turn around and want to get a franchise with Dominic's when Dominic's sell inferior products, just like a Biebs store sell inferior meat or food in our community, and we don't have a voice. You're followed around the store, but we're continuing to invest in that. That is not a good investment.
I have another call on line 803. Your line is open. State your name, where you're calling from.
Yes, it's Thomas calling from Charlotte.
How you doing, Thomas?
Good.
Been waiting on
doing,
you.
Bro? Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to the conversation and, you know, a lot of good points that were being made. You know, if I had, you know, one thing that I wish that I would really like to see us stop doing, more so than anything, is stop begging to be exploited. One of the biggest forms of exploitation that takes place during this time of year is refund anticipation loans. And this kind of speaks to the core of one of our main issues as far as us, you know, being a people and trying to develop a nation or be any type of people with self-determination, is that we beg to be exploited. And I'll just give you an example. Now, when you go to get your refund, you know, you get an opportunity to get your money within, you know, 24 hours, and in some places they'll do it same day, but it comes at a cost. Now, when you get a refund anticipation loan, there's bank fees and then it's fees by the preparer. And in a lot of cases, it lets you get up to maybe $1,500 right there on the spot. Now, because we've been trained to think in a manner that is very short-sighted and very expedient, we don't understand that we're paying 1,000% APR on some of these loans, meaning the annual percentage rate, which means that, you know, had you just waited an extra 10 days, you'd keep more of your money. Better yet, with the programs that are out there like TurboTax, you probably could have kept more of your money. They have programs now where if you have a simple tax return, you can get your tax returns done for free and get your money back within about 10 days. But that's the shot point. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do your tax return if you're not self-employed and you don't have major expenses other than a house. But let's just talk about the fact that when people go to these tax preparers, they're getting charged, like I said, 1,000% APR because they're being charged such exorbitant fees to get their money in a short period of time that, you know, that money is just blown away. So that $300 or $400 you paid out of your $5,000 check could have went to, that $300 could have went towards, you know, helping the child in Liberia go to school for a year off of $140. You know, so we have very short-sighted thinking and we have very expedient thinking, not realizing the, you know, the effects of what that can have.
We have to be educated, and, you know, this type of information that you're saying needs to be with a community organization of an area so that they can incorporate that type of thinking so they can disseminate that information to the people so if they want to respond back or have feedback, they can maybe deal with that organization and maybe you can educate the people, you know, like educate our organization and we can disseminate the information. And so they'll know better. Maybe they don't know what they don't know.
Well, I would buy that argument with the only exception that these refund anticipation loans are something fairly new in the past 10 years. So what were they doing before the refund anticipation loan? They're waiting their ass in line to get their money. You know, so that's what I'm saying. So they put themselves in a position to be exploited. So we can't be. So
they don't know. They don't know.
That's not an excuse. Because before there was refund anticipation loans, you was waiting to get your money. You might be getting banged in the head by the preparer for a fee, but you weren't begging necessarily to get charged an extra $200-$300 for money that you could have waited on in the first place. You follow my point? You had to wait before.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. We step up in line to get exploited.
And don't know no better.
Come put foot in my ass. Gladly. You know, that's a big difference.
I agree. That's like you hear in Chicago, you know, like Brother Ricky was saying, there are a lot of vacant lots. And I think a lot of those vacant lots go for relatively cheap, especially in a lot of these areas that they go ahead and, you know, they got the police running through there crazy. You know, they call these rough gangbang areas. Now, I don't believe. I don't buy into all that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those lots, I've seen somewhere where some of the lots in some of these areas are going for as little as $300 or $400.
And say,
so, you know, if you go ahead and go ahead and buy this flat screen TV when you get your refund, yeah, that makes no sense when you can go ahead and be invested in your future.
True.
Now,
everybody agree?
Now, yeah, I agree with you. Now, that situation is a matter of education, because they don't understand the value of land and only things. I mean, one of the biggest things that I think people probably could take away from this so-called, you know, economic meltdown, which is pretty much a self, an explosion that was planned. It was detonated. This wasn't like something that was, they just, you know, messed up and it just happened. They planned this. But, you know, getting back into owning things of value. I mean, if you look, there's a 10-year chart there. If you look at gold prices, have more than quadrupled. You know, silver has actually kind of outperformed gold. You know, precious metal, agricultural products, you know, food prices, wheat prices went up by almost 25% in the course of about 18 months. So, you know, getting back into the habit of owning things and understanding it's about things. See, when I was young, growing up, you know, I was, you know, I always thought it was about the money. But see, it's not about the money. Money is really is not. Money is a concept, and money has to do with the belief in credit, because credit, from the word Latin, means, you know, belief, pretty much. You know, and you have to.
Thomas, can you do me a favor real quick? Go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been in banking for over a decade. Primarily, you know, in real estate finance. You know, I've done some trading in the options market. Personally, I'm not licensed. I don't have my Series 7 or anything like that. But, you know, I've done quite a bit. You know, at my age, I'm 35, so I've been out on my own. I've had a chance to do some experimentation. You know, made some money here and there. Lost some money here and there, and made some money, and so I've learned quite a few things over the years. I'm actually working with a organization named TVRR, Division for Restoration and Reunification. They are working on trying to restore the country of Liberia back to greatness by way of agriculture, because in Liberia, they actually import 90% of their foodstuffs, and they have an 85% employment rate. And so the goal of the organization is to help the people to become self-sufficient, because now they just basically do subsistence farming. And the brother, Thomas Rogers, he's been doing work over there, missionary work, and doing work for well over 22 years in the country. And basically, you know, he has some contacts. Like one of the most positive things, we had a meeting this weekend, and the guy he's actually, you know, been buying land from all this time. He is basically, what's going on is that he has land that he owns personally, and then he's been awarded land by some of the local chiefs and the indigenous people. There's some 260,000 acres that indigenous people have basically given him access to for the purpose of development of the land, on promise that, you know, he'll put, you know, schools and hospitals up and try to help to develop the land and help people in the area with the agriculture. And the land that he owns personally, the brother that he actually is buying the land from, which I had no idea of until this Saturday when I met him, is a brother named Mr. Lafayette Diggs. The guy he's buying the land from comes from the aristocratic family who's run out of Liberia that he actually was an ambassador to Nigeria, and he was a project manager, and he helped to develop do a lot of different events on the continent. So he still has a very firm relationship with people in Liberia. And the guy, his wife is actually best friends with the vice president of Liberia's wife. They were schoolmates. And so, he's had, certain contacts and certain people that he's met and developed over the course of years who trust him. And so that's part of what he's got going on right now. So that's what we're working on.
Yeah, that with you. Let me play a clip real fast, okay? Well, this is a little bit, a little long, but I hope you guys understand where this brother's coming from. This is from my show the other night.
Umar Johnson. I'm a nationally certified school psychologist, blood relative of Frederick Douglass, political scientist and educator. In my professional work, I evaluate school-aged children, and I decide who goes into special education. I'm responsible for classifying learning disabilities, mental retardation, emotional disturbances, autism, ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, and the list goes on. But basically, my fight is trying to keep black boys out of special education, because special education, which is a form of miseducation, is the foundational anchor that is used to destroy and oppress black men across the lifespan. First, there is miseducation, which is the deliberate teaching to black boys of self-hatred and a simultaneous love for white people, and particularly a love for white women. And also within miseducation, you have the effeminization and deliberate homosexualization of black boys. And then that leads us to stage two, which is psychotropic medication. ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, these are disruptive behavior disorders that our young men are unfortunately labeled with when they refuse to accept differential treatment, maltreatment, miseducation, and intentional disrespect from educators within the schoolhouse, most of whom are middle-class white women. So when they do not accept the effeminization that is imposed upon them, they are now considered to have a conduct disorder. And so thusly, after that, they are then sent to discipline school, which ultimately is a segue into full-blown prison. And then once they get out of prison, they now are frustrated and isolated, which unfortunately leads to stage five, which is suicide or homicide, most likely at the hands of another black male. So those are the five stages of black male extermination: social engineering in the service of genocide, that the government, the largest society, from President Obama all the way on down to the local politician, endorses by way of neglect. And it is a fight that we have to stand up and push back against. And listening to the words, the eloquent words that the Reverend just spoke about, he's going through the same thing up there in his particular town. I know when you came on, Chef Rob, you had mentioned that you definitely like to talk about solutions, and so do I. But I would always caution anyone that there should be no talk about solutions until people first fully understand the problem. I'm a therapist, and when I do therapy, I cannot chart a path towards a solution. I cannot come up with a treatment plan until I first understand the history of a problem. And I only say that because I think historically black people in America and African people around the world have wasted a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources, and a lot of lives attacking problems that we don't understand anything about. And if I was to borrow the words of the late, great psychologist Amos Wilson, he said that if you study a problem close enough, you will see the beginnings of the solution right there within their problem. The biggest challenge that we have as black people in America is misinformation. A lot of people think they understand the problem, and they don't understand it at all, because misinformation is the greatest tool used against black people. Not guns, not drugs, not jails, not violence, not white women, but misinformation, the deliberate and intentional redirecting of black people's attention away from that which they should be focused upon to that which is totally irrelevant. So we have to make sure our people have the accurate information. Most of the issues that are discussed in the black community are framed in a dichotomous way, and neither end of that dichotomy represents the true issue. For example, if we take education, any discussion on education is going to focus on there not being enough money in the schools. It's going to focus on there not being enough qualified teachers in the classroom. It's going to focus on there not being enough African-American school principals to go around the country. The problem is that particular dichotomy that I just spoke of has nothing to do with why education fails. The problem is not the fact that there's not enough qualified teachers. Okay? The problem is not the fact that there's not enough money. The problem is not the fact that there's not enough black principals to go around. The problem is the white female teacher, who is the bulk of the American teacher profession. 93% of all teachers in America are white, and all of them belong to a teacher's union. And the teacher's union's job is to protect the job of their teachers, whether they teach or not. And we have a situation in public education where a teacher in most cities in this country, after they have been on the job for at least 3 years, they are guaranteed to have their job for the rest of their life until they decide to retire, no matter how poorly they are. So the true reason for the educational failure of black children in general, and black boys in particular, is because teachers suffer no consequences for miseducating our children. That's number one. Number two, the teachers' union has too much power, and they are able to prevent a school board from getting rid of bad teachers. In fact, I just got an email the other day. There was a brother who was a superintendent. I believe it was in upstate New York, not New York City, but in upstate New York. He is fighting for his job right now as a black male superintendent because he's trying to get rid of teachers, black and white, but mostly white, who are not teaching black children. And as a result of that, the teachers union is trying to get him fired. Nobody is investigating as to whether or not the teachers he wants to get rid of should in fact be fired. Nobody's investigating as to whether or not they have been miseducating our children because the union doesn't care about that. The union's reputation is based on keeping teachers in their job. Public teachers are the only professionals in America where you can be poor at what you do and still cannot be forced to leave your job. They have the greatest job security in the country. No other job in America can you be shown to be poor and still keep your job until you are ready to retire. So just to wrap that up, I just want to say that misinformation works through these dichotomous problem sets that we are given. For example, if we go over to prison and you say, why are there so many black men locked up in jail? People are going to tell you, number one, okay, because they are born criminals and that they come from parents and neighborhoods where crime is totally accepted. And then there's other people who are going to say that there's so much crime taking place because they're not given appropriate psychiatric medication. Now, psychiatric medication ain't got anything to do with the rate of crime, okay? And no black man is born a criminal in this country. But when you miseducate a black man who's public enemy number one, enemy of the state in this country, and then you prevent him the opportunity from earning a livable wage salary, so he can take care of himself and his family, he has no choice but to go to the underworld. The same underworld that Jewish gangsters used to go to, the same underworld that Italian gangsters used to go to, the same underworld that Irish mobsters used to go to, is now being left for black men to go into. Crime is the creation of the society. Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about that in any capitalist society, you must have crime because crime is an industry in and of itself. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that if it was not for crime, Wall Street would not be as successful as it is now. Nobody wants to talk about the fact if it wasn't for crime, you wouldn't have as many millionaires in America as you have now. Nobody's talking about the fact that the United States of America, the government and the society, relies upon black violence, black joblessness, and black miseducation in order for the economy to go around. How many police officers would be homeless right now if it wasn't for black crime? How many psychologists, social workers, criminologists, psychiatrists, how many halfway houses, how many prisons, how many probation officers, how many clerks, how many judges, how many attorneys would be jobless today, unable to feed their families if it wasn't for black crime? And so whenever you have crime,
you have an industry of crime. And so the job of the government and the society is to protect and proliferate that industry of crime to make sure that white people can feed their families. They are literally living off the backs of black men. They did it in slavery. They did it in Reconstruction. They did it in the Civil Rights era, and they're doing it today. And the biggest problem we have, and I'm going to stop on this, the biggest accomplice to the crime of black oppression in America, okay, is the unscrupulous middle-class black leader. Some preachers, some so-called civil rights leaders, some politicians, some black business owners. These people, the well-placed college academicians, these talent-intense, elitist, snobby, bourgeoisie Negroes are the number one accomplice to the crime of black oppression. Because instead of organizing the masses of black people, like the good reverend is doing, and standing up and putting a fight against the structure, they simply stand in between the masses of black people and Obama and the government and white people, and they simply broker deals between poor black people and rich white people. In other words, when something goes wrong in the black community, the government, the structure, sends in one of these Negro leaders. They send in one of these Negro politicians. They send in one of these Negro community leaders, business leaders. They send them in, and they tell them to do what? Put out the fire. So when they come in, they don't come in to organize the black revolutionary energy. They don't come in and say, brother and sister, calm down, stop being so emotional, and let's intellectualize and strategize this issue so when we hit them where it hurts. They don't do that. They come in to tell people to go back home. Forget about what happened. Put your faith into the government. Come back in a couple months. Let the law of the land prevail. And then next thing you know, 5 years then went by and nothing has been done about the situation. So yes, the number one enemy of black people in America is white supremacy. But the second enemy to black people in America is elitist blacks who live off of their oppression.
Sir. Okay.
I like that tape. That tape is right up. My organization, Morale Builders Incorporated, is Ali, because we agree 100% with everything that he said.
Hold on. Hold on, Perry. That brother's going to be at the Juneteenth Festival, okay? And one of the things I wanted to go ahead and say from what he just said, I want to bring up from what he just said, and I want Thomas and then Captain Hit to chime in on this because they have some information on this also, is that miseducation. And I think that at a time like this, when people are getting those big tax refunds or whatever, you should be putting it to the education of their own kids instead of purchasing that flat screen TV.
Well, yeah,
the misinformation there is also that a lot of us don't know how money works. We need to learn how money works.
Well, yeah, there are a couple things that he touched upon. Like you said, these dichotomous arguments, because, you know, just like, you know, he said that, you know, we're not born criminals. And, you know, like I said, part of the, I think, the healing process was because there's a certain pathology that we fall victim to in this country. And what I mean is that, you know, rather than, you know, you helping someone to cope because they're going through a situation, you've already gone through it. You know, some of the older generations, with their tendency to say, well, I made it through it. You should be able to do the same. Versus, you know, what white people do, they form support groups. They got a support group for everything. And we don't have really a support group. We don't have a support group to talk about the pain, the shame, the degradation, the deprivation, everything that we've experience, you know. So, you know, everything that he said is absolutely true. And, you know, one of the biggest crimes and one of the biggest disservices that we do ourselves is try to ignore, you know, the problem. We try to make it seem like, you know, like for instance, when parents send their children to school, the first thing, I'll give you an example, growing up, you know, because my parents are from the South originally. And when I was going to school in New York City,
you know, first thing that they'll do, you know, you go to school, the first time you question anything that's being taught to you, you know, you think you know more than the teacher. Your job is not to go to the teacher. Your job is to go in and listen. And that's because of our slave mentality. Because we've been told, no matter what that white bitch got to say out of her mouth, you're supposed to listen to it. Even if it's absolute nonsense.
Dick and Jane.
So, and this is what it is. So, just like any time, I give you a good example. You know, I went to private school on scholarship. And I was in a school that was basically, you know, predominantly about 90% Jewish. So, as a result, you know, I had to write an essay. I wrote an essay on the Iliad because it's one of the books in our reading list. So I wrote a book on the, wrote an essay on the, or actually the paper on the Iliad. Now, this white bitch had the nerve to tell me to my face that I plagiarized it because there's no way at my age that I could understand the prose and the poetry within that work at my age. Now, mind you, I have been taking Latin from the time I was probably 8 years old. And I've been reading stuff like this, epics, you know, probably since I was about that age as well. And they didn't even give me the benefit of my parents coming in for a conference. They kicked me out of the school, and then no one told my parents why. They left me to tell my parents why, and I couldn't explain it to them. They said, we don't want you. We don't think it would be a good idea for you to come back to the school. And so they didn't bring my parents in for a conference. So they left a 12-year-old to defend himself in a room full of, you know, probably 8 adults in the disciplinary board. So, I mean, yeah, so this kind of nonsense goes on all the time. And, you know, I wish more parents would really get educated about what happens. And someone like him, he's well qualified to talk about it because of his background being a psychiatrist. Yeah.
We have this Perry. Well, we have Morale Builders TV, you know, showcase, and we can put a TV show together where you all can disseminate.
That's what
you know,
hold on, Perry. Hold on, Perry. That's what we're working on now. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Remember that, you know, hold on, let's wait till we get that, you know, established, and we're working on it. Remember I told you how I want the show to go? That's what we're working on. We're going to put together this nice cooking program so we can go ahead and discuss those things. But right now, I didn't hear from Captain Hitt. I wanted to hear from him. How does he feel so far?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rob. The gentleman's statements in that clip, of course, were right on, and as many of the individuals know, I'm not sure if the other brothers have listened to our radio show on African American Nation Radio. We as the International African American Caucus are fully committed to the creation of an independent African American nation on the homeland of our ancestors. We feel that with the competent professionals that we have out of the 40 million African Americans that are living here in America, that a small percentage of them should return back and acquire 10,000 square miles of land and create a nation for ourselves. And this would fundamentally solve a lot of problems that we are experiencing here in America. First and foremost, the fundamental component of a culture is the nation state. Indians have India, Pakistanis have Pakistan, the Chinese have China, Irish have Ireland, Italians have Italy, etc. Every other culture on the planet has a state to call their own. And we as 21st century African Americans, and where we're different than Liberia, and where we're different than Marcus Garvey, is that our particular organization is focused on African-American national interests. This new nation that we intend to create on unoccupied and undeveloped land in Africa will be exclusively designed and ruled by the African-American people, meaning the citizens of this new nation will be the descendants of slaves born in America. We have the right to rule ourselves, and we have the competence and capability to do that in a democratic nation of our own. Now, once we take this opportunity and build this nation of our own, we will then have provided opportunities for ourselves and our future generations for the next couple of centuries. We no longer have to depend on anyone. We will make every single law. We will build every road and own every road. We will own the power company, telecommunication systems, the agricultural sector, the airport, the port facilities, the manufacturing sectors. It is time for us to rule ourselves. And that is what we in our organization are committed to. Now, we support those people who are continuing the community efforts here in America. When we build this new nation and we have a government of our own, we will then be able to marshal our resources on a government level and be able to make those necessary investments to keep our American investments, like the Chinese have American investments to the tune of $1 trillion. And we will make sure that those African-American investments in America are profitable in the future. And this is what we believe in. We can rule ourselves. We don't need anyone to tell us anything. Since 1980, there have been 34 new countries formed alone. The African-American people, at 40 million, we are the 33rd largest nation of the 220 that exist. We have more people than 80% of the countries on the planet today. If 1% of us decide to go to this new nation, 1 out of 100, we would still have more people than 60 independent countries on the planet. There are 60 nations in the world with an individual population less than 400,000. There. And this is what our goal is. And we support those efforts here in America. But in the end, it's time to rule ourselves.
You know what, Captain Hitt? Let me play this real quick, also from Brother Umar.
With the brother Sean, you know, he's on point. That's my brother. We're good friends. One thing I want to say, though, and I want to be very clear about this for everyone, because sometimes we don't like to deal with the truth as black people. And one of the biggest problems we have is that we do not spend most of our time in reality. The average black person spends most of their time in a dreamland that I call Negro land. See, in Negro land, the white people treat you the way you want to be treated. In Negro land, your children can receive a decent education. In Negro land, you elect a politician and they do what they're supposed to do right by you. But see, Negro land is an imaginary place that does not exist. We have to make sure we keep both feet on the ground and our minds set on the consciousness of the here and now. And one thing we have to understand about our existence in America is this, and it's a shocking fact that a lot of us don't like to understand. We can build. Yes, we can build. But we will never be allowed to build past a point that begins to threaten the power structure's control over us or our African brothers and sisters scattered throughout the world. And this is something that black folk in America don't get. We think that we're going to be able to stay here, build up an independent government or an independent media or an independent industry or an independent church or an independent school system that rivals or threatens the predominance of the European equivalent and think that we're still going to be around. Most of us who studied our history understand that there was a place called Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Charleston, South Carolina, and Rosewood, Florida, and dozens of other cities where the black industry superseded that of the European. And so the European set out with the support of the local, state, and federal government to destroy the black success and to put Negroes back in their place. I'm only saying that to say this, that we cannot exist outside of Africa without Africa's backing and Africa's support. I didn't say that we had to go back to Africa. I did not say that. Mr. Garvey never said that. But I'm saying that we're going to have to contribute to the uplift of strong, independent African nation states who will be able to back us in any economic, political, industrial, educational, or spiritual undertaking that we embark upon. Why? Because without the backing of an independent state, we will never be able to realize success outside of the continent, because any threat we pose to the existing European social order will be eliminated. So if we think we're going to do this without Africa, we can forget. To say it another way, black people in America are doomed if we do not begin to embrace operational Pan-African unity, if we do not begin to link up operationally with our brothers and sisters in the Caribbean, our brothers and sisters in Europe, our brothers and sisters in Asia, our brothers and sisters in Central, South America, and of course on the mother continent of Africa. As Marcus Garvey said, the future of black people without Africa spells doom and destruction. Yes, we can stay here, but you will not be here for long if you also do not make Africa what it needs to be so you can be what you have to be.
Those are very powerful words.
Absolutely,
very powerful
brother.
Words. What do you think about that, Captain Hitt?
Now, once again, he is absolutely right that we are limiting ourselves without the use of an independent nation state. Now, he didn't call out and say that to go back to Africa. What we as African Americans of the IAAC are saying is it is time for us to return back. And we will return back because we have the right to rule ourselves on land for ourselves. We in our organization are made up of competent professionals. We have builders. We have people that know finance. We have people that know how to fly planes, military. In fact, a lot of the individuals that are part of our organization are former military. The reason why is a lot of us that have been in the military have had the opportunity to live outside of America. I personally myself have lived 11 years outside of the country. I've watched Singapore, Malaysia grow, Dubai turn from sand and snakes into one of the most modern cities on the planet. So I know personally that we can transform any piece of territory into a modern nation. And that is the only way we're going to get respect in this world, when we as African American people stand up and acquire land and build our own government and our own nation for ourselves. That is the only way. No more begging this government or begging the banks or begging anyone. Let's go to our land, and I have full faith and confidence in ourselves because I have watched the tallest building in the world built in front of my eyes when it was in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, and I couldn't believe it because the people decided to do it, and it was done. It's time
Brother
to rule
Thomas.
Ourselves.
I wonder. Sorry about that, Captain Hitt. Excuse me, Brother Thomas. And our people going ahead and taking that their tax refunds and buying and spending on BS. Again, I keep stressing that. Don't you think it's time that a lot of us go ahead and invest in what's going on the continent?
Well, yeah. There's several things that are if people aren't familiar with what's going on the net. There's Venture Capital for Africa. The Kemetic Pipeline with Devon Bell. He just, if you haven't gone to the Kemetic Pipeline, his brother is really on point. He actually has some software for trading platform called TradeX. And what the Kemetic Pipeline is going to do is help to link the diaspora through commerce. It's very powerful. He's been working on this for several years now, and it's coming to fruition. So now, as a vendor, as a business owner, you can do commerce, get involved in international trade through the Kemetic Pipeline. So if If you have not heard of it, please go to thecometicpipeline.com and join his group. Very, very good brother. I said out of L.A. So there's a lot of things going on, and like I said, people just aren't aware of them. So, you know, as far as with, you know, what we're doing with TVR, you know, the whole purpose of Liberia was to have the sense of African slaves to run a country. So not really that different than what Captain Hiss is talking about, because that was the whole purpose of Liberia. Liberia was formed on that basis, to have the country ruled by African-American, the descendants of African-American slaves, because all the people that helped to form the country pretty much came from out of the Charleston, out of the, you know, North Carolina, Virginia, all those regions is where the people who originally first settled and formed Liberia came from. So really
And brother, yeah, you're right about that, but where... Now, remember, there's a big difference, though. See, Liberia was created by the American government. Francis Scott Key, the author of the Star-Spangled Banner, when these Negroes put their hand to their heart and listened to the national anthem, he was part of the American Colonization Society, and it was them, which was created in a bar. They came up with the idea of repatriation of African-American people to Africa. Nobody came, black folks didn't go to them and say, hey, you know what, we want to go back. In fact, when they sent the first boat of former slaves to leave America to go to Africa, when they landed there, the slaves thought they landed in Cuba. They had no idea that they were even going to Africa. And for the first 30 years of Liberia's existence, it was ruled by an American governor. Secondly, the people back then were 18th century former slaves. Their only skill and expertise was to farm land. Today, we are leading this effort as individuals who want to return and to acquire land ourselves. And we are coming with individuals that have the spectrum of industry. We run the spectrum of every facet, what it takes to run a nation itself, completely different. And this is done exclusively by us and for us. So the American, so when we land there on day one, the African Americans who are in that pioneer force will make up that government, will make up its own defense force. There's no American governor. There's no one there. It is us. People that are the descendants of slaves born in America. So this is where we're different than Liberia. And we as a culture of people, 21st century African Americans, were completely unique. And we have that right to rule ourselves as a new culture, because that's what we are. We're totally different than the Africans. We are Pan-Africanists in that what we wish for ourselves, we wish for them. What we want for success for ourselves, we want to see success for them. However, we're totally different. I can talk to you brothers on this phone, and I can talk about the Jets, I can talk about Chicago, I can talk about the Bulls, we can talk about the Lakers, we can eat the same, we eat the same foods, we can talk about our music. We are united in that sense. We speak the same language. But when we as individuals go to another country, no matter what country it is on the planet, we will always be looked upon as a foreigner, no matter where we go. And what we're saying is it is time for those of us who wish to go, and we don't expect everyone. For those who don't want to go, we tell them, keep your black ass here in America. You don't need to come. But for those
let me ask Brother Perry something. Brother Perry,
yes.
You there?
Yes, sir.
So yes, what do you think about the idea of nationhood, nation building, and using your company to go ahead and promote what's going on both sides of the Atlantic, and go also deal with the brothers and sisters that's in the Caribbean, South America, and throughout Europe? Do you have a plan to go ahead and unite the sisters of the globe?
I admire the brother for wanting to attempt it, and I would love to help him in that effort.
I would like to help them get it started now while we have organized the black folks now to re-educate, to get their minds set and ready, and they can practice the nation building, because I think of village like administration anyway, so that it's not based on if the leader die, we have the administration to re-elect a new leader. But in the meantime, we would take care of the people in seven areas: in education, in health and sciences, in housing and environment, in economic and career development, in leisure time activities, in public safety, and in communications. We can use our tax exemption here in America to help fund nation building, because like in this country, there's no American culture. And like the brother said, we're a foreigner everywhere we go, and we don't have our own country. So we want to be have our own nation, we can use this nation as our nation, because United States, you know, Italians, you know, if the Italians, you know, if you say you these 10 bullet points, you Chinese. If you say these 15 bullet points, you Italian. You know, you're Russian and so forth. What are our bullet points to say who we are? We have no identity. And like we might not want to go like with Marcus Garvey model necessarily, but we want our own nation and start our own nation. And I agree. And I can use my tax exemption. I have banking. Oh. I have banking right now, which I prevent.
Hold on, brother. So what you're saying, you know, let me get this straight. You know, I'm just gonna throw it out there. So you're willing to go ahead and you put up your tax exempt status to go ahead and help us build this nation? Is that correct?
Correct.
So you're gonna work with me, because I've been trying to build this crew here so far.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of rags.
Of course, I got to help build my nation.
Hold on a minute.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to go ahead. I have a team, but it's a team that's a bunch of ragtag misfits, a bunch of gangbangers, if you will.
I could coordinate them.
Hold on a minute. We got to do this one at a time, okay? Hold on.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to go ahead and work with them, and they're willing to go ahead and give up a lot of the stuff they've been doing to go ahead and do something a little bit different. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go ahead and get with you. You know, and you and I are trying to work on this TV thing. Okay, so
yes,
I'm gonna work with you, and I want to go ahead and have them guys out there with brothers Brother Thomas, who has a lot of knowledge about how finances work. I want to work with him, with Captain Hitt and his idea about nation building. There's a lot of brothers and sisters that's out here trying to do something. So we're going to go ahead and try to go ahead and do this. I need your commitment on this, man. So, you know, don't have me chase you down, because I'm a thug. I'm an ex-thug.
You come to my office. You can use my office as headquarters, you know, at 449 East 35th Street in Chicago, Illinois. My telephone number.
I know where it's at. I'm letting you know. I still got thugism in my blood. I can't get it out. Okay?
Yeah.
Even though I go ahead and I got my businesses, I go ahead and I got to do what I got to do there. But still, when it comes down
I'm
to it,
I'm chairman over 240-something people and president.
Okay, so we're going to work with you, because we have to go ahead and build something.
And
because you know, you live in
my organization, and I'm chairman.
Hold on. You know yourself. You live in Chicago, and you see what our youth are going through here. Okay,
yes,
and it's just not unique to Chicago. It's in every major city in the U.S. and even overseas in a lot of places. I also see stuff where this thug life, that culture, has been over in Africa. It's in the Caribbean. In every place. So we have to go ahead and start doing something. We can't drop the ball on this. We need to do something. You know what I'm saying?
Promote neighborhood talent. We promote talent through radio, newspaper, TV. We're on our own website, and I have my own publication. I got millions of viewerships, you know, that I could disseminate the information on what we be about. And we could coordinate it, you know, and we can empower all those people that who got workable proposals, and we can submit it for funding. Everyone's ideas, they can submit them. But we will coordinate everybody's day so it don't look scattered and nothing ties in. It's unified. We get on the same page first before we start budgeting and everything, before we start.
Right.
And ask everybody their interest and so forth, so everybody have a vested interest in it. So we all want to make the project work, whichever projects that we work on. But most.
Hey, you know, let me real quick. Let me say this. Okay, Brother Thomas, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so funding for these endeavors that a lot of us have over here. What would you recommend the first area we try to dabble and dab in? Do you have some area that you think we should go ahead and try and deal with first that go ahead and bring us a quick return?
I got employment.
Hold on, Perry.
Well, I mean, as far as, like, you know, doing fundraising, I mean, there's things, you know, I think the Internet, I mean, is one of the primary sources. I mean, I know one of the things that TVR is working on right now with their new website they're going to develop, finding different ways to use the web, like, you know, with the, you know, one of the things that, you know, Obama actually did that was, sort of effective was his use of the Internet and using the Internet virally to spread awareness and get fundraising efforts. So using the Internet as a way to basically garner support and get people's buy-in on whatever it is you're trying to do. But as far as any type of opportunities for investment, as far as a quick buck or anything, there's nothing. I don't see anything right now that's, you know, going to give you a quick return without any major risk. So if you look for something like
that, I do.
Hold on, Perry. Let him finish.
Yeah, like I said, I don't see anything out there right now that's going to give you a quick guaranteed return with no major risk. Because anytime you're doing investing, there's risk involved, and if the goal is to try to raise funds, I wouldn't commingle those two. Once you get yourself a ready reserve and you're ready to do some risk taking and make some investments, then that's different. Yeah, so two different things altogether.
We're gonna get with you.
I like
go
to
ahead,
hop in.
Go ahead, brother.
Sir. Okay. We think that this is a great opportunity right now. I think this is could be potentially good economic season, good economic times when the economy is low and so forth. And we can give an economic stimulus to the community right now and get some money right now. We're looking for account representatives, but people who can't find no work, they need some form of employment. They go out trying to find a job, but they just can't find one, or they don't have the right schooling, or they never had a job before, or they've gotten out of prison and they got a felon and they can't seem to get no job. They walk up and down the street to the stores, and the stores say, well, it's slow right now. I can't hire you. I only got a few people. And it costs a lot of money to employ people. Now, we could provide a means to earn an income. We have, for $25, you can join our organization. And with
Hold on. But a lot of us may not have that $25. So what is your plan?
I can let you work right now. I can put you in the field now if you have the will to do it. And all those that who do contribute, I can give you a tax credit. All those that who want to contribute to fund entertainment businesses, to put a banner across our flyers.
So let me ask you this real quick. So is that just limited to Chicago, or are you willing to work with people that's outside the state?
I could work worldwide because our banking is worldwide. I could start to give everybody an account in any country around the world. They got Chase or in America with Bank of America. I can protect any business. They can deposit their monies into our account, and it'll be deposit protection, which a bank can't do. I can give overdraft protection, overdraft prevention, not overdraft protection, where everyone, businesses and so forth, they'll never get an overdraft bank statement to say they're overdraft by one penny. if I prevent businesses from overdrafting by anything, never let them overdraft anymore, that would save millions of dollars. The senior citizens and people just writing checks, they don't know what their current balance is because someone got a check in their drawer and then they cash the check. I could prevent all of that. So that could save this, for the shopaholics, it'll get them out of...
okay, hold on, hold on, Perry, that, hold on, Perry. So this, let me address this to Thomas. So, Thomas, do you see that as a way, as a feasible way of doing things? I mean, you in the banking industry, do you think you can do it that way?
I have to, you know more about what he's doing before I can answer that question because I'm hearing him, but I have to see like his business plan and see everything what he's talking about. I mean, it sounds good on
you
paper.
You can understand
like,
it. You can understand it by just asking
hey,
questions.
Hey, hold on a minute. Let him finish.
No, because what I'm saying is I don't know exactly all the details behind what you're talking about as far as just the overdraft protection and the overdraft charges that people are penalized for from the banking industry. Yeah, there's a ton of money. That's fee income for banks. But as far as you know, the way you're going about doing it, you know, I would have to see details of your business plan and determine if it's viable. That's what I'm saying. I just don't have enough information. That'd be foolish for me to say this works if I don't know what your entire business plan is. I just don't operate that way. So,
seniors can...
Hold on. Let me take another caller. Kayla, your line is open.
Hey, what's going on, brothers? Thanks for taking my call.
How you doing?
I usually keep you on the line or not. I thought you were going to enact some revenge on me tonight. You know?
Do you want me to?
No.
You want me to go ahead and bring havoc to you and go ahead and creep vengeance and stuff?
Nah, it's all good, Rob. It's all good. You know I can be retarded
when I need to be.
Yeah, I know that. I know you're my brother and everything like that. Welcome, say hello to Captain Hit, Thomas, and I think his name is Perry, your brother, the guest you got online. Thanks for everybody for attending. You got George in the chat room, Warlord X, Reality, and this other guy, Caribbean Talk Show. I just want to say one thing. First of all, what Brother George wrote, he said, Habitat for Humanity. Yeah, well, we can build houses. We talk about building houses all we want, right? Until you have families to put in those houses, it's all for naught. The problem in our community, just like I did my show last night, there's one school in Tennessee where 90 girls got pregnant at one time. 90 of our little girls got pregnant at one time. You know, one time. You know, the destruction of our community is so thorough. You know, we can't talk about business until we get ourselves right. Once we understand exactly what we want, then it'll be clear, okay, this is the material aspect of it. We can't start talking about material aspect of it until we get it in our head, what it is that we want, you know? Family and nature, everybody in their mind, no matter how much you may party and like that, everybody in their mind should be thinking about your family, what is the best interest? I want to have my family, my kids, whatever like that. When you start thinking about that, then you start thinking, my kids, oh, my God, I'm going to have kids, a wife and whatnot, school, education. What kind of world do I want? Do I want my kid to be a Darian Albert, Kilvin, a gang member? Do I want all this stuff? Do I want my girl listen to Lil Wayne? Then you start thinking in terms of nationhood, nation building, and stuff like that because you're thinking long term. You're thinking about your survival. Right now, we got to get black people to that point. If we got to the point where we got people having kids all over the place, ain't raising their kids, and women, it's all right to have 7 kids and not a husband and everything, we can't talk about nationhood, you know? You can build all the houses you want to, but if you ain't going to have no one to put them in, or you're going to have Section 8 come in and put single mothers in, you know, so that's why we have to talk about what is it that we want. You know, we want
okay,
to be
hold it. Wait a minute. Let me say this. I don't think it's a problem. You know, you're having these 90 girls getting pregnant at one time. I honestly really don't think that's a problem. It's the education that comes along with it. That's what they're lacking. So it's like this. If they have these 90 babies, that's a good thing for us. That's more
well,
black
well,
babies
yeah,
than go
those
ahead
kids
and...
are more likely, Rob, to be
let me finish. Let me...
poor. You know, they're going to go, who's going to raise those kids? Who's going to raise those kids?
Hold on.
Those
let me
kids
finish.
Are all statistics. That's where the problem's coming in at. You know, we got a problem.
Hold on, let me
a
finish.
Breakdown in our culture, man. We got to address this.
Hold on. Let me finish, okay? Let me do this. You can go ahead and address it, and let me finish. My thing is this, is to go ahead, and I don't mind that. That doesn't bother me. They can go. They will get educated to go ahead and look. They shouldn't go ahead and did what they did. Okay, that's a fact. But this the thing. We cannot go ahead and throw away that just helps increase our population. That's a good thing. That's what people like Bill O'Reilly is worried about. Every day it was like almost at one time it was like every day he's worried about them going ahead and being a minority in this country. And we need to go ahead and recognize that they are afraid of us. And if we can go ahead and educate them, if we're going ahead and trying to put some kind of programs in place to go ahead and educate our people, that's what we should be working on. And something else. The thing, my topic, going ahead, us not to go ahead and waste our tax dollars, our income tax money on BS.
Wow.
So let's go ahead and try to educate individuals on what's going on.
Rob, real question. The brother that was on there that you played the clips for, on which show was he on?
He was on my show.
No, I'm saying what date.
I think that was last week, Tuesday.
Last week, Tuesday. If you have his email contact information, could you send it to him?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. As a matter of fact,
the reason I want to talk to him because we actually, you know, probably more than 10 years ago, there was a project that we undertook in Orangeburg, South Carolina, where we actually adopted a young male child, like in the third, fourth grade, because I was familiar with the work of Kwasi Kwarteng-Zufu, where he wrote the book on stopping the destruction of, you know, our young black boys. He talked about the third and fourth grade failure syndrome. I'm pretty sure he's familiar with it. I want to kind of follow up with him because that's exactly what happens. Like I said, when he talks about it, like I said, Dr. Kwasi Kwarteng-Zufu talked about this years ago. Yeah, I want to kind of follow up with him because he sounds like he has some good insights.
Let me give you his phone number. It's he doesn't mind. He gives it out. His phone number is 215-989-9858. That's Dr. Umar Abdul Johnson. Okay.
Yeah. I know, I understand. All I want to say is this. Not only do we have a high pregnancy rate, do you know young black women now lead an abortion rate? You know? So,
yeah, now that's
you know,
a problem.
18 million black babies were aborted since 1970, you know? And it pains my heart because I don't even want to talk about it. I can't even divulge some of the stuff that I know. You know, and it's very painful as a personal and painful thing that I know about, you know, and so 18 million children were aborted, you know, and not only that, now how many kids have died in the inner city where girls throw their babies in incinerators? So, you know, we have basically got to really sit back and do some really, really self-examination.
That's,
you know,
nation building.
We have to basically say, yo, look, this is what we are, and this is what we're not. You know, and there can't be any more conflict because this is about our survival now. This is not just talking
talk.
Yeah, it's about culture. Our culture is lost. You look at our music and everything like that, our culture.
Not lost.
Our girls and our young men did not act like this a couple generations ago. You know, we've fallen
so far. It's no guidance, no leadership.
Hold on, Brother Perry, hold on, man. Go ahead, Kayla.
Yeah, so that's what I want to say about that. Also, I want to say about the nation-building part. Now, I agree. The work that Captain Hiss is doing is wonderful. There's one thing I want to add about about Liberia and the Back to Africa movement during that time period. Actually, it was not started by the American Colonial Society. It was actually started by Paul Coffey. He founded a settlement in Freetown almost 50 years before that. And Thomas Jefferson and all these white people saw how successful. And he was a black man. And he financed it himself by his own pocket, a settlement in Freetown, Sierra Leone, which we basically caught, they captured ships, and they repatriated slaves, and then people from the Revolutionary, that fought in the Revolutionary War on the side of the British, went back there to settle. So that was already in place before the American Colonization Society. And it was a volunteer organization. African-Americans volunteered to leave. You know, they volunteered to leave. And not only that, it was only like around three agents in the whole colony and the rest of the colony was actually run by blacks. So they were gearing themselves up to take the colony over and become a republic for the first time they landed. And also, the black settlers fought a war, and it was, Liberia was paid for in blood. It was the, I forgot the name of the battle, but Elijah Cooper. He fought, him and the settlers fought 800 warriors, and they basically paid for that colony in blood, and they basically was able to settle and build new settlements because the there were slave traders, white slave traders were conspiring with the natives to destroy the colony and send those people back into slavery. And the African-American settlers, you know, something that we don't hear about in our history books, fought against them, and they fought against the collaborators of the slave traders, you know. So Liberia destroyed the slave trade along the whole coast of West Africa. So therefore, it's a part of our history that's not really talked about, you know. And so therefore, I agree with the point that I consider Liberia an African American nation. I do consider that. It's just that we have never had the academic, the political, financial, and the mental capacity to do anything with that. You know, we were basically brainwashing us into the plantation America only mentality. Now, some people say, "Well, let's just create our own nation." You can do that too. But at the same time, you know, if we have a chance to really build a nation with a country that's already in existence, we could do that. And maybe one solution is not all. Maybe we need another solution, like what Captain Hiss talking about. You know, where we need both of them at the same time.
Okay, hold on. Let me throw this out there because we're approaching just about the end of my show. The thing that Dr. Umar Johnson was saying, you know, at the end of that last clip, is that we're not going to go ahead and make it without some of that support over there in Africa.
We need Africa. And right now, let me give you an example. Go up, look at the East Coast of the United States. You live on the East Coast of the United States, right? If you ever have your eyes open, just drive up down Route 13, Route 1, Route 95, right? And just take a look at all the businesses you see from side to side, right? You'll see names like Conway, this one, that one, Ford. Whatever it is, it's 400 years of Anglo-Saxon development. That's what the United States is. We delude ourselves into thinking that this is ours too, but the fact of the matter is, who owns these businesses or families that own, had wealth in there, don't know what it's like to ever go without. You know, majority of white people, particularly here on the East Coast, are connected to wealth. You know, don't let it fool you. We're the only permanent working class of people in America. You know, we're the only permanent, we got to work for our dollars, whether we have a professional job or blue collar.
We could redirect those funds to make it work for us. We could recirculate the dollars.
We need a country to invest in. You know, a country.
We're gonna work on that. Look here, people. This is pretty much my show. I want to go ahead and get some closing statements.
Got a great show, Rob.
Thanks a lot, brother. I'm gonna get to you in a minute. Hold on. You know, let me go ahead and get everybody one at a time. Because I haven't heard from Captain Hitt in a minute. So, Captain Hitt, you got any closing arguments?
I just would like to give the gentleman the links to our website. Please check out africanamericannation.ning.com. That's NING. That's our NING network. And also go to YouTube, youtube.com/AfricanAmericanNAT. NAT. AfricanAmericanNAT. YouTube.com/AfricanAmericanNAT. Check out the site links. Check out some of the videos and check out our NING site. And we look forward to following up with you, brothers. And in the end, we will get our land and we will rule ourselves. And that's the bottom line. At least that's what we're committed to, and that's what we intend to do.
Thank you very much,
Rob.
Brother Caleb?
Yeah, like I said, one way or the other. Like I said, I'm not, one way or the other. You know, both ways sound good to me, you know. But the bottom line is, sitting in America and letting another 20 years slip by doing nothing is not an option. You know, we have to do something. You know, so whatever plan pans out, I hope we all come together and get both plans support, you know, wherever it may be. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that, man. We're going to do this. Brother Perry, you got any closing statements?
Yes, sir. Glory be to God. In the name of Christ Jesus. You know, we've already done it. It's already been prophesied, and we just got to have the will to be ready to be led by our Creator. It's going to happen anyway. And so he's bringing us together and utilizing our skills if we allow ourselves to be led and let our Creator build our nation. He'll unite us, you know, in a way where he'll fit us in the right person, in the right spot, with a chain of command that is respected. And I think we could do it. And I'll help make it that happen if it's a if we have God as our leader, you know, not a humanistic, but a spiritual leader, spiritualism over our humanism. I'm for that, not humanism over our spiritualism in our nation building. It has to be spiritualism over humanism. Otherwise, I'm on the side of spiritualism, and it's a spiritual warfare. And, you know, stuff is going to occur soon, so you got to know what side of are you on. Are you on humanism side with no God, or are you on God's side that can include humanism with proper guidance? So glory be to God in the name of Christ Jesus, and we can do it.
My show, Brother Perry, Brother Kayla.
Yeah, good night, brother.
Good night. You did it, Rob.
Thank you, brother.
Disappeared.